So we had seen the Gemara here in Kiddushin, which tells us that even though normally to marry a woman, you have to give her a shal approval. But our Gemara tells us that it doesn't actually have to reach her. That there is a way to do it without actually giving it to her. Maybe, I guess this is a firmer way of doing it. But all the different varieties that can emerge. But maybe this is like the Meir Sharim and this stuff. But so you don't have to give it directly to her. She says, give it to somebody else, give it to my brother or whatever. And that could affect the Kiddush. Right? That could really be a separate city. You don't have to have any women present at the Chuppah. So you say, all right, so give this to my brother, give this to some other guy, and that's going to affect Kiddushin. And that's because of the concept of Arev. And the concept of Arev means that there is a concept of co-signing, guaranteeing a loan, that if Noah wants to borrow money from me, and I don't trust him, so he gets Morty to vouch for him, and Morty says, I'll take on the achrayus. If Noah defaults on the loan, Morty is actually liable, midin Arev. So we see that somehow something happens that actually makes him responsible, and somehow that mechanism is going to work for us here and allow Kiddushin to take. Well, I told you, you'll have to go to Morty if you want to borrow them. Oh, you have a question.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Are we, I guess, I feel like we have some sort of bias toward the idea of din Arev, because we think of Arev within more of a monetary, I guess, from a monetary perspective. So is Arev more of like a mechanism? It seems like the Rishonim that the idea of din Arev is more like a mechanistic thing, but are like the, I guess, like prototypical case of Arev is the monetary Arev.
Well, we also mentioned yesterday a couple of dozen times that it's interesting, just, yeah, I kept emphasizing this point, that it's interesting that the Gemara of Avasher brings as a source really a story which is not about money. Right? It's a story about Yehuda and Reuven advocating on behalf of their guardianship for Binyamin. It's a fascinating idea, right, which really does seem to suggest there's something here beyond the monetary model. So it could be that you're onto something, that this is not really a monetary principle per se, but there is some form of connectedness that's taking place, and that we can look at that from examples that are not really monetarily based. But that being said, I think it is pretty clear that this Gemara and the general Arev by loans is still connected, but they both share, apparently, some kind of common theme. So I think it adds up to at least five views in the Rishonim as to how this works. The Gemara in Bava Basra takes us to the first step, but not far enough. The Gemara in Bava Basra tells us to look to Yehuda's statement, and that that's somehow relevant. And the Gemara calls attention to the Hana that does exist for the Arev in that his instructions were filled out. But what does that Hana do for us? We have to see. So we started yesterday, I think, laying out really two of the opinions. So the first opinion was Rashi's opinion. It sounds like Rashi's opinion is, and a lot of these opinions, by the way, you need some help from the Achronim to interpret them. They're not incredibly explicit. But if we look carefully, that Rashi's position seems to be simply Gzeir Sakasav, no other explanation beyond Vimasha Natsinu Batara, Sha'arev Mishtabi B'malve, Ani Yechol Molmo. And again, when you use the language Batara, that story, that reference in the Torah is only a reference to this non-monetary long context. So that is, again, an interesting point. So position number one is that simple idea, Gzeir Sakasav, we don't necessarily have any logical hesber behind it, but simply it's a din in the Torah that this kind of magic exists, that somebody who's not the actual borrower can end up in the repaying position. Then we discussed another view, and the view that probably shared by the Rambam and the Ritva in slightly different forms, that this simply has to do with the person committing, that the Arev, by expressing his responsibility here, that's enough. That creates this link. Now here, just to flesh out a little bit more, we started yesterday on this point. This is the Rambam L'shitaso. Have you seen the Rambam yet in Hilchos Mechira? The Rambam in Hilchos Mechira, Perek Aleph, Halacha Tesvav. We'll get to take a look. So the Rambam there writes that there is a possibility of a person just committing himself. That even though a chov normally is associated with some cause, I borrowed money, I broke your property, I stole money from you, I bought something I haven't paid back, normally there is some type of reason for a chov. But the Rambam says in Hilchos Mechira that it's possible to create a chov. So therefore, that is apparently what's going on here. Now, he actually connects the two in Hilchos Mechira, and he says that this is Midin Ariv, or that this is what Ariv is. Ariv essentially is a creation of a chov through one's concession. Now, it's interesting that in Hilchos Mechira, I'll just read it to you, that'll be the most direct, he writes that that situation is not asmachta. Now, presumably, it's not asmachta normally because you're not making it contingent. But in the case of Arev, it is contingent because it's very likely, hopefully, that the Arev will not have to pay back the loan. So it's possible that in his general situation it's not asmachta, but here in the Ariv situation it is asmachta, and or it's potentially asmachta, potentially a problem that is contingent, and that maybe the sales, maybe the obligation is not going to kick in, and maybe the Ariv only said this because he had such faith in the actual borrower, he didn't think he'd ever have to do it. So it could be that there's a difference between the Ariv situation and a general hisayvus. But just to read the language of the Rambam, again, because Mechira Yud Aleph Tezvav, he writes, HaMechayiv Asmo B'mamon L'acher V'lo T'nai Kla. That what if somebody makes a condition, and it's not contingent, there's no condition. He just decides to owe money to somebody else. He just wants to declare himself obligated to another person. Even though there's no actual reason for a chiyuv mamon, it's chayuv anyway. Shadavar zeh matanehi, that's a matana, that's something that we recognize. The same way you can give a gift, you can also give a IOU for a gift. Ve'eina asmachta, and that's not asmachta. Ketzad ha'omer la'edim, havu la'edim shni chayuv l'klon yimona. Oh, Shekasav lo b'shtar harei nichayev l'chamana. Afal pi yishen sham edim. O shemol v'chayedim harei nichayev l'chamana b'shtar. Afal pi yishu amar atam edim. Ho ol v'amar b'shtar harei zek kimi sh'amur hava l'chayedim v'chayev l'shalim. Afal pi yishnehen modim v'chayedim yodim shuhayu etzlo klum. But even though everyone involved acknowledges that nothing happened before this, there was no hezek, there was no loan, there was no purchase, nothing to substantiate this debt, but it doesn't matter. If he wants to create a debt, he can create a debt. Sharei chiyev atzmo, because he obligated himself. And here's where he adds, kamo sheyishtabe ha'arev, uvazeh horu rov hagov. So just like we have by arev, that's what happens here. So it's really the Rambam l'shitaso, that the person can create a chiyev. So here he said it's not asmachta, but again, the situation he described before bringing in Arev was a non-contingent case, just straight out. So it could be that when the case is more contingent or it's depending on something happening, that maybe you thought it never was going to happen. So then there is the asmachta possibility. So it could be that you need the hana that comes to the Arev. What's that hana that his instruction was carried out? That he said, give money to that guy, and you listen to him. That's called hana, so that's enough to deal with the asmachta issue. While the Ritva, over here in the Gemara that we mentioned yesterday, the Ritva is similar, but the Ritva probably understands that there's a kinyan here. that the kinyan that the other person makes in accepting the money, that is going to create hana for the guarantor, because the guarantor is going to be happy that he was trusted, or in this case, that she was trusted, and that her words were followed. That creates some quantifiable hana, and that's essentially a kinyan kesef through a shavik kesef mechanism. So again, just what's the common element between the two? That probably the Rambam and the Ritva both understand this to be simply a person accepting upon himself a chiyuv, but the hana that the guarantor gets from having his instructions followed, that does something. For the Rambam, it clears up the asmachta, and for the Ritva, it constitutes a kinyan kesef. No, you had a question?
Yeah, how?
Is it about how hot it is in here?
Yeah, the Rashba's there. Yeah. I don't exactly understand how the Ritva would apply the concept of Ari. Is him listening to her request equal to trustfulness? Faith?
Why not?
I don't know. It just doesn't. They seem different.
So it's interesting also that we mentioned before. There's a little bit of a machlokas about what's happening when she says give it to somebody else. Is she saying give it as a gift, or is she saying loan money to somebody else? So if it's a loan, that's interesting on a couple of levels. First of all, because it's not going to last with anybody. If you loaned her money directly, that wouldn't work for Kinyan Kiddushin. And yet, if you loan to somebody else on her instruction, that works because of the hana that she gets. And that could be trust, right? Because if the scenario is that, let's really redraw the picture here, that her brother, again, various models of less romantic or more dramatic wedding scenarios. Right? So somebody's begging you for a loan. You say, I don't trust you. Sorry, I'm not interested in lending the money. So his sister has such rahmanas on him, she jumps up in front and she says, please, please, give him the money. If you lend him, I'm telling you, I'll marry you because of that, through that. So then you say, okay, that's pretty convincing. And you lend him the money through that. So apparently that's trust. And that hana, wow, look what I was able to get him to do. Boom, that creates the kinyan.
Is that really trust, though?
Could be. If the situation was like we described, that you were hesitant to do it until she convinced you with her impassioned plea, then maybe it's trust. Now, the Rambam, we don't necessarily need to call it trust. Even the ritual language is a little bit iffy in both cases. You find the language of Mehenia in some of the girses, which seem to focus on trust, and so the Rambam's language doesn't really use that word. And the Rambam says that because you listen to her, that's hana. So whatever it is, that hana is going to be effective in creating this. Should just mention there are some other understandings in the Rambam, because this is probably the simplest explanation of the Rambam, because as he said, it's basically l'shitaso and Hilchos Mechira. And Hilchos Mechira, he mentions Arif. So it seems like this is essentially what's going on. The Ksos has a slightly different suggestion. He invokes a mysterious concept, which is mentioned in the Gemara in Bava Basra, called the Kinyan Odisa. Odisa comes from the language Hodah, and it's a little bit of a mysterious Kinyan. It basically means that you acknowledge that you owe somebody else money, and that creates the transfer of ownership. So maybe that's what the Rambam's talking about here. Yeah, I owe you money, and boom, it's true. So that may or may not work here. Others question why you need to bring this in. And there is some debate. The Gemara doesn't have a lot to say about Odisa. It's more a discussion in the later sources. And some say, based on the Gemara there, that it's really limited to a shchiv mira, a person who's about to die and wants to transfer property before he dies to get around the Yerusha issues and doesn't have the physical capability of doing any other kinyan. So maybe Odisa only works in that context and therefore really shouldn't be a model for anything else. Others understand that, like the language suggests, Odisa is not really a kinyan. It's really a raya. It's when there's another claim being made. Somebody says, you owe me money, and you acknowledge it. It's basically just another expression of the idea of hodas baldin, Kameya Adrian Dami, that when you acknowledge that you owe money, so then that creates a halachic proof, your own acknowledgement. And again, that's only going to be relevant in such a case and doesn't really have much to do with Arya. So whether you need to come on to Odisha to explain the Rambam's position, it's a question. But really the straightforward way seems to be simply to look at Hilchos Mechira and see a strong link between these two statements. Okay, so far so good? Everything makes sense? Okay, so a third view, which is very interesting. Again, you need help from the later Svarim to really see this, but the Rush and his son the Tur seem to have the same idea, which essentially is that whatever happens with the recipient is happening to the Arev at the same time. So you could understand that to mean that the Kinyan that the recipient gets in picking up the money, so that is what affects the Kinyan condition. Or you could say it a little bit more, which is how it sounds like from the tour, and how some understood the Rush also, that essentially what happens is that they are both considered to be the same person. That Arev, as really the word suggests, right? What does the word Arev really mean? Sorry? Mixed together, right? And we say, Kol Yisrael Arevim Zevazeh, right? Which goes more to Noah's question that this is a concept both halachically, generally, hashkafically, with implications not only in Mominus, but implications also in mitzvos and brachos and things like that. So it is kind of a meta theme. So the idea of Arevus means you're mixed together. So maybe that's what happens, that essentially there is a bond. And through that bond, it's as if you, the guarantor, receive the loan yourself. Again, that's not explicit in the Rush. You have to kind of read it in. The language, the Rush is Parak Aleph, Halach Vav, Tzim Vav. Arei Vavafel Gav Glomacha Anol Yadei Meshabed Nafshe Hayisanami Afel Gav Glomacha Anol Yadah Kamakanya Nafshe. So it seems like essentially, even though the Hanot, the language is very sparse, the Torah's language is a little bit more, but she's not getting Hanah herself, it sounds like. It sounds like through the Hanah that comes to the other party, that works for her too. So either you understand it as one broad Kenyan, or you can understand it that they are connected somehow, and this connection essentially means that when her, whatever you want to call her, her protectorate guy is benefiting, she's benefiting too. So that Shava Kesef that went to her brother in our example, or whoever it is she's advocating on behalf of, that Ano goes to her. And that's enough to affect Kiddush. Okay, so far so good? So a fourth view that you find in the Rishonim brings up, revives the suggestion that Noah made yesterday involving Shlichus. But we mentioned that Shlichus could be helpful here, but we have to arrange the parts a little bit differently because the various scenarios we came up with yesterday weren't going to really fully answer all our questions. So Shlichus is really invoked by the Rashbam. The Rashbam in the end of Bava Basra, where the Arya Sugya comes up. Question is just who's the Shliach of who? So, presumably, again, what's our scenario? So, Noah is borrowing the money from me, and Morty is going to be the Arya. So, perhaps in this scenario, Morty is the Mishaleach, and I am the Shliach. But essentially, what happens is that when Noah says, please lend me money, and I say, no, I don't trust you, and then Morty comes in and says, I'm telling you, trust him, give him the money. So that essentially is an act of appointing a shliach. That basically he's saying, listen, give him the money and I'll cover it. I'm behind it. So essentially, Morty is saying to me, lay out the money on my behalf, and it's really going to be ki'ilu, I'm the one who is doing this. So now, if I have a hard time getting my money back from Noah, so I can go back to Morty and say, listen, I only took the money out of my pocket on your instruction, so that's really your money I was lending to him, so now please give me the money that you instructed me to loan to him. Hi.
Why is the mom going to loan that
off? Oh, so that's a good question. That's something we'll have to try to figure out. Why should there be a need to come back to me for the money? Why don't we just say I can now leave the picture completely? Or say that really Noah could leave the picture completely, and that should just go straight to Morty to make up the loss. So that's something we'll have to figure out in terms of whether that's going to be adequate. The Abinezer has a tshuva in which he also advocates the idea of shlichus, since that basically he thinks shlichus is what makes Ariv work. So then the question is, in addition to Morty's question of why do we have to go back to the loaf at all? But he asks another question. Why do you have to invoke Hana? And the Gemara and the Bava Basra mentions the Hana as if we need something else. So why is that a part of the picture? Why isn't it just straight shlichus? Morty gave me instruction to lend money on his behalf, and that was it. So he and others who discussed this question, they go back to the Asmachta idea. They assume that because this is somewhat of a complicated arrangement, so therefore maybe we need to have a solidifying factor. We need to erase any concerns of Asmachta, and therefore that's what this Hana comes in and concretizes. The fact that Morty actually got some benefit from the fact that he was trusted. So that creates a Kenyan Shlicha, so to speak, and that's going to be enough. That's going to affect this situation. So that's a very interesting idea that's what's going on here, that that's how this operates, that essentially it's a mechanism of Shlichas, perhaps with some additional quirks. Yes, sir.
Just understand a little better, how exactly does the Hana take away the concern for Asmachta?
Because it seems like it's a little bit abstract, right? Because it doesn't necessarily show how it's dealing with the same thing. But when it comes to Asmachta in general, and so we find that Asmachta is a concern, let's say if somebody makes a bet, right? Somebody says, I'll pay you if you win the game, or something like that. So we're concerned that the commitment is not a genuine commitment, and when the other guy wins the game, he's taking this money illegitimately. So in that context, we find that there are certain things which make it a little better, certain things which allow the deal to be considered valid and not just some speculative contingent plan that no one ever took seriously. So one of these things is a kinyan, that if there is a kinyan of some kind, so then that sometimes makes the deal into a more solid thing, that it's not considered to be just somebody spouting off and he doesn't really have any intent to follow through. So if that's the case, so it could be here as well that the kinyan that comes through the hana that he's getting for being trusted, that's going to affect this deal and it's not going to be a problem of a smack. Possibility. There is another view which might be problematic for us. We have to see. But this is something which goes more to the general question of Ariv by loan. And this is the Nimuke Yosef in the end of Baba Basra. So I don't know if you had a chance to see this yet. So if you guys can grab it. What else possibly is left? What other theories could you possibly have as to why the Ariv is Chayiv? And here, to come up with this theory, focus specifically on the loan context, because it's going to be a little difficult transferring this back to the Kedushin context. But dealing simply with the loan example, I told you to lend money, you did, the guy ends up defaulting, now I have to pay. What other avenues are available to explain why that is? What would you say?
Well,
Now,
if you, I guess, create some sort of indebtedness to the logo itself, as opposed to necessarily the Malva.
Create indebtedness to the logo. How would that work? And how would that help?
No idea.
Okay. Speculation.
Yeah.
That's Donnie.
Maybe that it's a function of almost, not exactly, but almost like a tie, where it's saying, we're saying that the deal wouldn't happen unless we have the art.
Okay, but then why does that tnai obligate a third party? Right, a tnai usually affects how two people who are doing business together, what are their terms?
Yes, but you can have can't you have a tnai that like involves another party or another?
Yeah, you can say, listen, I'm only going to do this if somebody comes to my party tomorrow. He's going to my party.
If you don't pay up, then this person is going to.
So who's the tnai with? The tnai is with the logo, or the tnai is with the art?
I think it's with both. It's a tnai of the logo,
mm-hmm.
But which involves the. The RA.
But what obligates the RA then?
By the RA agreeing with the Lovet to do that.
So this goes back to the Rambam and the Ritva, basically, that their commitment. And their commitment is on tonight, like it is contingent.
Okay. Yeah.
But there is an additional possible component here, which is somewhat of a controversial idea. But here, I'll just look at the picture this way. Right, so Morty told me to lend money. I did. Now, look, I'm out all this money. Because Noah defaulted. Morty, you gotta pay me. What does that sound like when you phrase it that way? Maybe. Maybe not.
Almost like Mizikin?
Oh! Bingo! So says Donnie, quoting the Nebuki Yosef, that maybe this is a bit of hazard. And then here, I was right not to trust Noah. No offense, he was a hypothetical Noah. Right? So I didn't want to trust him. He said, I want to borrow money. I said, no way, you're never going to pay me back. So I was not going to do it. And I was going to have all this money in my pocket. I'd be fine. And then Morty comes and he says, oh, no, it's going to be okay. Just do it. There'll be no problems. So now I lend him the money. I'm out. So perhaps what you have here is a type of Nezikin. Now, is that a good theory? Is that a perfect theory? Is it a flawed theory? How well does it fit?
Uh-huh.
Oh, so one problem is, it's not helpful for Kedushin. Again, hoping that we're not getting these marriages off to the wrong cook, but to invoke the whole thing as a concept of Hezek, you know, that, oh, you ruined my life! You see, that's why I was married you in the first place, through you ruining my life. Right, that's probably not the theme. That is what makes it worse. That's one of the major issues here, that if Kedushin is Midin Arev, it's hard to see it as Mazik, which is why we started this question by saying, if we focus on the loan example, maybe this presents itself, but it's going to be hard to see what we can use to transfer this to Kedushin. Donnie?
Isn't there also another common issue of Dibor, there's no Nezikin by Dibor?
So Dibor maybe is a question, but let's focus on something else. I think what you're getting at is that, in general, to be chayiv for Hezek al-Kidin, it has to be something that you do. So this is causational. Right? He didn't do anything. He told me to lend money. Then, and that could have worked out, and then I lent the money, and it turns out later that I end up not getting it back. So that's a few steps removed. And normally we have a rule, if we're referring to, of Rama Benazikin, it's Pater. That if your Nezikin is indirect, you're normally excused. So this is a big question, how this fits. So Nassim Bestetner, I think it's the first time we've mentioned him in a while, and his Chuvus Laharus Nassim has a few Chuvus about this, objecting to the whole idea of Arev as Mazik, since he doesn't think that it works for a number of reasons. But part of it is that it's too indirect. That there is a whole discussion grum of a nezikin, normally you're not chayav for. If you cause a nezik indirectly, you're not chayav. Now, there is this in-between category called garmi, that sometimes, even though it's indirect, but it's more than average level of responsibility, and then we say you are chayav, maybe it's only a little rabbanan, maybe it's a knas, it's a whole story. But there are some times when causing is a little bit more direct. But those cases, they usually require a very high likelihood of damage, or almost definite likelihood of damage, that the damage should be immediate. So here, you don't know what's actually going to cause any loss. Maybe the guy's not going to default. And even when he does default, this can't be considered something that happened at the moment that the RA gave the instruction. At that moment, the future was still bright and hopeful. So whatever happened later can't be considered to have happened then. So to call this nezikin and to fit it in with any of the standard rules of nezikin is a stretch. Now, it could be, nonetheless, and this is how some understand it, right? It could be that what we're talking about here is a chiddush, and that's the whole point, that maybe we need a little bit of Rashi too, and we need to say that this is a gzeiras hakasuv, but in hachanami, that's the nature of the gzeiras hakasuv, that once you have this concept of arev, this expands the parameters of the zikin, so that this is something that's actionable too. If we didn't have the pasuk, if we didn't have Yehuda, so then you're right, I would look at this through the lens of a normal nezikin case, and it would be very hard to hold the Arif liable. But maybe the nature of the pasuk is to tell us that this expands the parameters of responsibility, which is an interesting idea, because this is a huge topic. I'll just allude to it a little bit now. And again, so we'll run out of time in a few minutes, but our goal for today, which we just about achieved, is to lay out these five Shittos and Rishonim. This is the basic foundation. And God willing, on Monday, we'll supplement with some further points and then hopefully move on. So there is a fascinating Ritva. The Ritva in the Kedushim Kabbalah Chassidut, which also seems to be a precedent for a Arev Mazik relationship. And this Ritva, give it to you a look at, is very fascinating because it's hotly debated whether it's accepted the halacha, and it's a lot of potential implications. But the Ritva explains the Gemara in Bava Metzia, where it's called the case of Zulshaft. It was the city of Zulshaft, where they sold wine at a cheap price. And it didn't last forever. It was a special sale. And you could have gone and bought this wine for yourself at a cheap price, but you ask your friend to do it. And then it turns out he messes up and he doesn't do it before the prices go back to normal. So it sounds like from the Gemara that he had some liability. Why does he have liability? Okay, you missed out on your chance to get cheap wine, but what kind of liability is that? So the way the Ritva explains it, it sounds like because you trusted this guy, that trust makes him now liable for the consequence of failing to live up to that trust. So because he didn't do what he was supposed to do, now you're out some dollars, he's liable.
Yes, sir. I don't know if this is the same thing, but I thought that the way to understand that is just that he didn't ask him for to buy the wine at $200. He was specifically asking for the, I guess, entity of wine at $150. Meaning he
whatever the difference is was his mistake in that sense in laying out extra money.
And it wasn't a monetary mistake. It was the fact that he only wanted the.
So it was a shlichus mistake.
Yeah.
And doesn't that come up in the second paragraph of Kedushin?
It's shino
the
shlichus.
Yeah.
So there are
like,
so there are other ways to understand this Gemara, but in terms of the Ritva,
that's the chiddush that he has. This ritva is a major discussion because you can imagine all kinds of scenarios in your life where this could come up, where this question of how liable is somebody for not coming through with something they were trusted to do or something they promised to do, and it had implications for you, how liable should they be? So whether or not contemporary Bate Din and Poskim rely on this ritva is a major discussion in Poskim. It's a big topic. I remember thinking this many years ago, just to date myself here a little bit, so I mean, I realized there was recently a presidential election, but it got some attention. But many years ago, in 2000, it was also, not 2000, sorry, in 1992, so there was also a noteworthy presidential election. So when Bill Clinton ran against George Bush Sr., so there was a third candidate, Ross Perot. And Ross Perot ran as a third-party candidate, got more votes than anyone else as a third-party candidate. So he ran, and then he dropped out, and then he came back in again. So when he dropped out, there was this woman who volunteered for his campaign who tried to sue him. Because she said, you told us you were going to run, and we exerted all this time and effort and money to get you on the ballot, and then you drop out, it's not fair. So at the time, I was thinking maybe she passes like the ritual, that that's the idea, that because she acted based on his promise, because all of these expenses and efforts were based on him committing to something that he didn't come through with, so then that's what creates a liability. So this ritual is very significant. What's also interesting, if you think about it, so this ritva kind of also addresses like a orev mazik relationship, but in the opposite direction. That the other way we're saying it is that orev is chayiv because of the mazik. And this is the other side of that, saying that this person is a mazik because he's an orev. In other words, that accepting the commitment expands the parameters of liability, and where you would otherwise maybe wouldn't be liable, your commitment made you liable. So if you follow that point, you see it's two different sides of the coin. What comes first? That we learn out Arev because of his hezek, or we learn out the hezek here because of the Arev? But an interesting point that it potentially also has this relationship between an Arev and a mazik. So just to quickly recap the five views that we talked about today, one is the position of Rashi, that it seems to be a Gzeres HaKasuv. Two, the position of the Rambam, of the Ritva, that it's just the Arev committing himself, the Rambam L'shitasa and Hilchos Mutira, that there is such a thing, where he mentions Arev there also. But the Hana is necessary here to deal with Asmachta issues, or to create the kinyan on the deal, even though it still stems from this commitment. The third possibility is that there is an identity between the Arev and the borrower. So what's happening with the borrower is happening through the Arev too. Whether you want to say it's a kinyan that's affecting them both, or you want to say that it's the actual receipt of the hana, but it's simultaneously affecting both parties. The fourth possibility was to say there is a shlichus happening here, that the Arev makes the Malvin his shliach. And parenthetically, you point out, by the way, that the stipler points out over there that this doesn't even require halachic shlichus. It's not shlucho shlodim moso in the halachic sense. It's merely that basically this loan ends up coming from the Arev. The Arev is basically telling the actual lender, listen, you're now working for me. So it wouldn't matter if this person is Jewish, is not Jewish, whatever it is, he basically is acting on behalf of the Arev, and that's what makes it work. And the fifth possibility is this interesting idea of seeing the Arev as a mazik, and therefore he has liability for that. And we saw a number of problems with that. It doesn't seem to fit the roles of Hezek. And most directly for our sugya, it's not clear at all how that can plug back into the Kiddushin and
fit that model.
But we also noted that the Richmond Bucencia perhaps provides a little more support for the idea of a relationship between in order of the Mazik and perhaps in the other direction. Okay, so I guess we'll stop here. So again, so Gavro tomorrow, thank you for putting up the inconvenience, but I hope to meet you here in this room as close to 9 o'clock as possible. Everyone should have a wonderful day.
Stay warm.